You're listening to TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Now, TalkZone presents Our Global Hope, World-Changing Leadership Talk, featuring Dr. Henrik Mann, discussing higher standard leadership through a broad scope of issues in the worlds of business, politics, nonprofits, international development, environment, media, and religion. Here's your host for Our Global Hope, Dr. Henrik Mann.
Hello, listeners of Our Global Hope. It's time for more World-Changing Leadership Talk. We're here to explore our world through the lens of leadership, to give people a voice on what good leadership looks like from their local reality, and to explore the implications of a new triple bottom line definition of success, one that is focused on advancing the dignity of people, growing profit, and protecting the welfare of the planet. I'm Dr. Henrik Mann, president of GenCom International, a global management consultancy and California brokerage. You can learn more about our show by looking us up at www.ourglobalhope.com. And our listener call-in line today is 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-GO-FOR-IT. Last week on Our Global Hope, we enjoyed the privilege of discussing the power of charisma and market branding as related to matters of leadership. This week, we delve deeply into matters of political economy and assessing the corrupt impact of the world's leaders at the forefront of the steering controls of our global economic and political system. Let me provide an extended introduction for our guest, who we're honored to have with us today at Our Global Hope. His name is John Perkins, and he had the official title of chief economist at a major international consulting firm during the 1970s. He advised the World Bank, United Nations International Monetary Fund, the U.S. Treasury Department, Fortune 500 corporations, and countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. In his role as economic hitman, he worked directly with heads of state and CEOs of major companies to promote and develop debt-creating projects for political ends. During the 1980s, he was CEO of an alternative energy company that was a pioneer in developing environmentally beneficial power plants. He devoted much of his time in the 1990s and 2000s not only to writing and lecturing, but also to establishing and supporting Dream Change, the Pachamama Alliance, and other nonprofit organizations that are committed to creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world. He is author of such books as Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which spent more than 65 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and has published in over 30 languages and is now required reading at universities and business schools in the United States. Wow. Welcome, John Perkins.
Thanks, Henrik. It's great to be with you.
And we also want to have on board this morning my part-time co-host, author, speaker, and professor and friend, Dr. Charlie Self. Welcome, Charlie.
It is a delight to be with you and to be engaging such an important topic or set of topics, Henrik.
Well, John, I want to begin by thanking you for sending me an email regarding Joe Berlinger's movie Crude, The Real Price of Oil. I saw the movie here in Berkeley when it came out a few weeks ago, and he was there after the show to answer some questions, and I had the privilege of having him on our Global Hope a couple of weeks ago. And he said good words about you during our show.
Well, that's nice. I've got nothing but good words to say about him, too. He's made an amazing movie there. It's a tragic story, and he's told it in the most eloquent way.
He sure has. Today, though, we want to focus on primarily on your new book that is coming out in 4 days, and it's called Hoodwinked, An Economic Hitman Reveals Why the World Financial Markets Imploded, and what we need to do to remake them. In your book, you say that the current economic crisis is not a fluke. You want to begin to explain that and lay that out for our listeners?
Yes, you know, I think, Henrik, we're at a time in history that's truly, truly unique. We've never gone through anything quite like this before. And this economic crisis is really showing it up in a very big way. We're at a time in history where Less than 5% of the world's population lives in the United States, and we consume more than 25% of the world's resources. That's not an economic model. That's a failure. You cannot try to sell such a model to China or India or Africa or Latin America. You'd need another five or six planets just like ours without people on it to do that. So this economic crisis is telling us that we failed. And we can't go back to normal because normal is a failed model. We have to come up with a new one. And what I talk a lot about in Hoodwinked is that this model really has developed over the past 40 years, really beginning in about 1970. And it's a model that I would call predatory capitalism. And I refer to it as a mutant virus of capitalism. Capitalism's gone through many forms over the last 400 years. This one's unique. And it's very oriented toward making a few rich and powerful people a lot richer and more powerful. It's a very selfish model and a very dangerous model, one that's based on profit regardless of social and environmental costs, deregulation, don't regulate businesses, privatize everything. And we've seen in the last couple of years that it's a total failure. So it's time now to recognize that and for all of us to demand that we move beyond it.
You know, John, as I think about the unique platform that you have because of your first book coming out and the story that you share of your life and now you traveling all around the world sharing your message, why do you believe that you have such enormous credibility to talk about political economy when we've got the president and everyone else in the world trying to tell us their version of what the events are?
Well, I don't know why I have any particular credibility, except I certainly lived it. I was one of the people that advanced that predatory form of capitalism back at the beginning, back during the 70s when I was an economic hitman. So I was in on the foundations of it. I think I understand it very, very well. And today I'm 64 years old. I have a 2-year-old grandson. My only reason for living really is to turn it around, to change it. I have no other axe to grind. I'm not trying to accomplish anything. I'm not trying to make a lot of money for myself or start a business or run for politics. So perhaps that carries a certain amount of credibility that my sole desire for the rest of my life is to create a sustainable, just, and peaceful world for my grandson. And that means creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world for every child growing up in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia, the Middle East, Europe, everywhere, because we live on such a small planet today. I think people haven't really quite come to grips with how incredibly interrelated we are. This is something that's happened within the last decade or so, that we've become so incredibly interdependent that we have to recognize that we cannot have homeland security in the United States until we recognize that this whole planet is, in fact, our homeland. And that's what I'm dedicated to spending the rest of my life doing.
Charlie, some thoughts?
Well, I'm a historian, and I just want to reinforce a couple of the key points that John has made. If you actually go back to Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, you'll discover that his writings contain as much ethics as they do economics. And what we have seen in the last 40 years is a crisis of ethics. And it's a crisis afflicting governments as well as multinational corporations. So even the current mortgage crisis in America, kind of the micro that a lot of people are feeling the hit, you have the combination of unparalleled greed and the referees joining the game with government policies that have stimulated some of that. So I think what's exciting about this conversation is we're going to be able to get past right-wing, left-wing, get past the kind of ideological wrangling that keeps us from looking at what I'm going to describe as a polyvalent and multicolored approach to economic sustainability and ethical living. So we're not eliminating ethnic distinctions or national economies. We're not trying to somehow homogenize the world, but we are trying to create unique local and global ways of connecting and cooperating so that people can thrive.
John, when I think of your role as initially as an economic hitman, I realize that maybe our listeners aren't quite sure, all of them, what that might mean. I'm wondering if you can explain that and how your role was affecting nations.
Well, I think it's fair, Henrik, to say that we economic hitmen have really created the world's first truly global empire, and the first empire that's been created primarily without the military. And we work many, many different ways, but perhaps the most common is that we would identify and will identify a third world country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sisters, but the money doesn't actually go to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, power plants, industrial parks, highways, things that benefit a few wealthy families in that country, as well as our own corporations, but do not help the majority of the people who are too poor to buy electricity or drive cars on the highways or get jobs in industrial parks. But they, the people of the country, are left holding a huge debt. They can't repay it, ultimately. And so we go back to the country and say, you can't repay your debt, so give us a pound of flesh, sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, vote with us on some critical United Nations vote, or allow us to build a military base in your country, something along those lines. In the few instances when we fail, and I talk in my books about how I failed with Jaime Roldós, the democratically elected president of Ecuador, and with Omar Torrijos of Panama, when we fail, the jackals come in and they either overthrow governments or assassinate the leaders. Both Roldós and Torrijos were assassinated because I was unable to corrupt them. And in the few instances when the jackals also fail, like in the case of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, where we both failed twice, then and only then do we send in the military. So we've really created this empire that's unlike any empire ever before created in history, because it's been done pretty much in secret through economics. Most people in the United States don't realize that we've been doing this, but we've definitely been doing it.
When you think about the origin of this, you said it started kind of in the 70s, but would you say that was when the mutant form of capitalism started, or earlier?
Well, this process of building this empire has been going on since the end of World War II, and it really picked up in the 70s. And then in the 80s, when Reagan became president, he really embraced the economic philosophy of Milton Friedman. And up until then, most of our leaders had embraced Keynes, and I think Charlie would probably have something to say about this as a historian. Keynes very much believed in the role of government, believed that there needed to be regulations, believed that there was something more important than profits. Profits were important, but they were only a means to an end. Friedman, on the other hand, in the Chicago School of Economics, said the only thing that business should do is maximize profits, regardless of the social and environmental costs. And there should be no regulations, because regulations just get in the way of allowing corporations to maximize profits. Reagan very much embraced all of that, and so has every subsequent administration since, Democrats and Republicans alike. And so we've reached this point now where the real emperor, if you want to call it that, is a group of people that run our biggest corporations. I call this the corporatocracy. This is not a conspiracy theory. These people don't have to get together to conspire to do anything illegal. Most of them never even met each other, but they do. They're all driven by the same single goal of maximizing profits regardless of the social and environmental costs, deregulating, privatizing, basically taking over the geopolitics of the world. And this has been building ever since the 70s and the 80s. It took a large leap forward after 9/11, because 9/11 was the shock that allowed this whole set of policies to really advance itself, while the people were so shocked by what had happened in 9/11 that basically we would agree to just about anything.
Well, John, as we go into our first break, I know that Charlie will want to respond back, but I want to remind our listeners that our listener call-in line is 1-888-463-6748. That's Go For It. You can learn more about our show at www.ourglobalhope.com. We'll be right back with John Perkins for more world-changing leadership talk.